This is Health Matters with the 10th episode of Taking Charge of Your Health. Our topic this week is the impact of mood on health.
There is as much physiology behind mood as there is behind anything else in your body, and mood, an essential ingredient in the recipe for health.
Everyone has their ups and downs, but mood disorders are actual physiological conditions in the body with real physiological consequences.
It's a shame there's so much stigma associated with mood disorders. They're no different than any other body affliction. People feel genuine sympathy for someone hard of hearing or who has a serious disease. But often people suffering from depression or anxiety don't get a lot of understanding. Yet mood disorders are a reflection of body chemistry mix-ups.
Some mood disorders are genetic, like manic depression, for example, which is strongly linked to genes. Men and women are affected equally by this disorder, but other forms of depression and anxiety affect twice as many women as men.
Which makes you wonder, is it the male-dominant culture we live in that causes twice as many women to have depression and anxiety?
The jury is out on that one, and in a way, it's a little beside the point. What's important about mood disorders is getting them treated. The earlier clinical depression is treated, the less likely it is that it will become a chronic problem.
Here's the physiology of it. There's a center in the brain for emotionally charged memories and persistent negative thought patterns. It's called the limbic system. It's here that a complex set of glandular reactions occur during stress, anxiety, and depression.
However, the complexity pretty much boils down to a chemical, cortisol. Under conditions of stress, anxiety, or depression, the brain and its messengers tell the adrenal gland to produce cortisol. In the short term, the cortisol gives you a boost. But when the adrenal gland is chronically activated, there are broad consequences for the body, increasing the risk of diabetes, hypertension, heart attacks, strokes, immune dysfunction, and obesity.
Mood chemicals are called neurotransmitters, messengers that tell the next nerve cell in line what to do. There's a fine balance between the two primary neurotransmitters. The ones that excite the neurons and the ones that excite glutamate is essential to learning. But too much glutamate injures and even kills neurons. Much of the damage from a stroke, for example, is caused by toxic levels of glutamate.
The neurotransmitter that inhibits activity, GABA, is the one that makes you feel relaxed. But if GABA levels are too low, the result is anxiety. Medications prescribed for anxiety, such as Valium, Ativan, and Xanax, stimulate the GABA receptors.
There is a natural way to increase your GABA levels. It's that magic bullet, exercise. But more on that later, because glutamine and GABA are only part of the story. There are three other neurotransmitters involved in mood dynamics. And these three are the ones that really run the show, because they determine the balance of the other two.
No doubt you heard about these neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine. In depression, all three of these drop, causing the glutamate levels to rise.
At the same time, a critical cell survival chemical also drops. The critical to the life of a nerve cell chemical is tagged BDNF. When BDNF decreases, the nerve cell starts to atrophy and die. The good news is that when BDNF levels rise, nerve cells thrive. They grow and send out new connecting nerve fibers.
BDNF levels drop under conditions of depression, chronic stress, and chronic pain. Images of the brain taken under these conditions show an amazing thing. If these conditions go on long enough, the frontal cortex and the hippocampus sections of the brain actually shrink.
Medications can raise serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, and BDNF levels. The result is an improvement in mood and, equally important, a reduction in the physiological consequences.
But here's the deal. Exercise does the same thing. Exercise boosts crucial neurotransmitter levels and BDNF levels. It is as effective as medication, more so in some cases. Studies show that exercise worked better than Zoloft in treating depression in the long term. Not that medication isn't appropriate at times, but exercise is a powerful tool. It reshapes the brain.
And that's the key point. A pill can alleviate mood disorders, but it does not provide all the other benefits that you get from exercise, including the increase in frontal cortex areas that enable higher thinking and mood control.
Exercise does not eliminate the need for counseling, though. While it balances out the chemicals and increases the potential of your brain to lay down new nerve networks, you still need to tell the brain what you want those networks to be. That's where counseling is so helpful.
Right. The brain takes information and cements it in there. But it has to be provided with the right info. It doesn't discriminate between a good idea and a bad idea. It will program in a compulsion as efficiently as it programs in a commitment to exercise.
If you're hung up about something or struggle with difficult memories, that means your brain is currently wired to keep the problem alive. Counseling provides guidance to create a new way of looking at the situation.
And that new point of view helps to change the wiring. But here's the thing, not everyone needs counseling. Some of us just need a good strategy. There are 10 happiness strategies that have a proven track record in alleviating mood problems. The first is gratitude. Appreciate what you have. If you need to make a list of what to be grateful for, do it. It helps.
Second, practice optimism. Expect positive outcomes. Try to see the best in people and in circumstances. Third, don't compare yourself to others. Focus on your own life and make it what you want it to be.
Fourth, surround yourself with loving, supportive, positive friends and family. Social interactions change your brain chemistry. Serotonin and dopamine levels rise when you have positive social experiences. So do other positive chemicals. Fourth, surround yourself with loving, supportive, positive friends and family. Social interactions change your brain chemistry. Serotonin and dopamine levels rise when you have positive social experiences. So do other positive chemicals.
Six, live in the present. Enjoy the moment and allow yourself to play and be frivolous. Seven, strive to be part of something bigger than yourself. And eight, volunteer. Studies show that helping others increases human happiness.
The ninth strategy is to accept what you can't change. Just let go of things you cannot control. And 10, of course, is exercise. Exercise is the most tangible of all the strategies to improve your happiness. All of these strategies work to reprogram the mood center of your brain when you repeat them daily. It's the repetition that stimulates the brain to change.
If you want exercise routines that you can incorporate into your daily routine, take a look at KIDE's Taking Charge packet. They're available at the Kim Yurton Memorial Library, the Kamau Diabetes Management Program, the Tribal NF Recreation Office, the Food Distribution Program, or Humboldt Furnishings.
If this is the first episode of Taking Charge that you've listened to, you can find the earlier 9 programs on our website. For this audio and more information, visit our download area at www.kidefm.org. The Taking Charge series is produced and written for KIDE by Cynthia Potten, engineered by Joseph Orozco. Our readers were Florine McCovey, Joseph Orozco, and Jay Rinzulli. Thank you for listening.